World Ain't Ready, Illumis fanfic written by Idiopathic Smile, and read by Full Day's Drive. Chapter 4. Eponine brings her brother over that night, so there's no chance to talk about anything until Gavroche is safely in the kitchen, raiding the fridge, and the pantry, and the freezer, and possibly also the stale Halloween candy stashed in the junk drawer with rubber bands. Gavroche's superpower is the ability to eat anything and not be sick. He could wolf down a pound of Smarties, wrappers included, and then ride a tilt-a-whirl for an hour, no problem. The kid's appetite is only matched by his efficiency, so Grantaire is to give her a very shortened version of events. "One day, Grantaire," says Eponine, when he's finished, "I left you alone for one day. Not even a whole day, because I saw you in Spanish this morning. And now you're doing exactly what you said you wouldn't, for free?" "Yeah," says Grantaire from the floor. "In my defense, it didn't even seem like a good idea as it was happening." Eponine rests her eyes from the computer screen and swivels the desk chair to face him. "How long are you on the hook for?"
2.5 months.
He flops an arm over his eyes. "And I'm gonna have to eat lunch with them, so I was meaning to ask."
"Yeah, no, it's fine."
Her voice is oddly flat. She twists side to side, chair squeaking.
"I can sit with someone else for a while."
"No, I mean, I asked. And everyone's okay with you joining us if you are."
"Why wouldn't I be?" says Eponine.
The chair has gone quiet. Grantaire peers up at her.
"I know you might have, problems with some of the group," he stammers out.
"It'll be fine," says Eponine. "I'll just be sure to sit as far from Combeferre as I can."
"No," says Grantaire. "I mean,
who, Marius? We get along fine." Grantaire chews his lip, not sure how to proceed. Eventually, she takes pity on him. "I know he's in love with Cosette," she says, conversationally. "She is blinking a lot, though. He's got government with me. She's in my 6th hour. I've been passing notes between them for the whole year."
"Eponine," he says, before he can stop himself.
She doesn't get to call him a doormat and then actively hook up her crush with another girl. But Eponine sighs and shakes her head.
"No, I want them to be together. 'Cause if they aren't, there's always going to be some stupid particle of my brain going, 'Oh, he smiled at me again. Maybe this time it means something.' If they aren't, I'm just always, always going to be..."
She trails off. "Fuck that, you know? Salt the earth and move the hell on."
"Yeah," says Grantaire, swallowing. They don't drink or get high on nights Gavroche is with them. They've never talked about it. It's just how they do things. Tonight, it's a crying shame. He could stand to feel fuzzier right now.
"So, who else is at that table?" says Eponine, spinning back toward the computer.
"That Haitian chick, right?"
"You'll love Musichetta," he promises. "She's...
nice," he nearly says, "but that's not accurate."
"Well, actually, she's a little mean, but she's your kind of mean."
"Well, that's promising," says Eponine. "We all know I get along best with obnoxious assholes."
She stretches out her foot to ruffle Grantaire's hair, and he rolls away, making indignant noises. Which I guess bodes well for dealing with a new pretend boyf- There's a creak in the hallway, and he catches himself leaping up to shush her, like it's a war movie and she's going to give away their positions to the enemy.
"It's the heating," Eponine reminds him.
"The hell, were you afraid it was my brother?" she says. And she's joking. He can tell she's joking, but not fast enough to prevent the stricken look on his face.
"Oh my god, you are."
"What, worried he won't keep it secret?" Eponine is looking away, but he can see her face reflected in the still dormant computer screen, the ironic twist to her mouth. If anyone can protect a secret, it's Gavroche. He wonders if she knows about the times Grantaire has tried to pump the kid for information about their weird family shit. Grantaire knows he should feel guilty about invading her privacy, but Gavroche kept completely mum anyway, so it's a moot point.
"I know we can," he says now.
"I just... don't want your kid brother to think I'm this much of a loser," he can't make himself say. Gavroche has taken to wearing a knit cap and covering his school folders in scribbled cartoon characters and monsters. He's pretty damn good for a 12-year-old.
and watching Gavroche pore over paper, frowning in a very familiar way, never fails to fill Grantaire with a weird stew of pride and panic. "The whole massive deception thing," says Grantaire at last, "not setting a very good example."
"Fair,"
she says.
She smirks.
"What about the whole gay boyfriend thing?"
Grantaire would rather not deal with it, but he doubts there's hope of stemming that particular tide. It's only a matter of time before the story crosses into the middle school rumor mill. He's bound to find out eventually.
As if on cue, Gavroche slips into the room, closing the door behind himself with his foot, and balancing a plate piled with food on his head.
"Who's bound to find out what when?"
"Grantaire's got a boyfriend," says Eponine. Gavroche retrieves the plate, grabs a Pop-Tart, and takes a huge bite.
"You're into douche?" he slurs through a mouthful of s'more filling.
"Those things are disgusting." Grantaire only puts them on the shopping list because Gavroche devours them whenever he is over. If someone asked, Grantaire would deny feeling nervous. Then again, Grantaire is a huge liar, and he's got bad associations with middle school and shit like this. He clears his throat.
"Sometimes."
Gavroche crams the rest of the Pop-Tart in his mouth, chewing thoughtfully.
"Okay,"
he says at last.
"Whatever."
He throws his narrow shoulders into a shrug, bobbing his head for a second, and then letting it loll to one side. It's a move he's been pulling a lot lately. One Eponine swears he lifted from Grantaire. "My turn on the computer."
"Give her 5 more minutes, dude," says Grantaire.
"Eat your gross-ass Pop-Tarts." Gavroche sighs enormously.
"And I was gonna do you a favor."
"What? Illegally download a bunch of music I didn't ask for? From shady websites that'll get me put on government watch lists till I'm 90?
Sometimes Gavroche's grin goes disturbingly Cheshire.
"And for free, too. You're lucky you know me, jackass."
Grantaire pulls himself up and steals a fistful of chips from Gavroche's plate, mostly as a diversion so he can tackle the kid into a side hug, over Gavroche's protestations.
"Ack! No feelings! Show your love like a normal person, by buying us useless shit."
"I am, dude," says Grantaire. "I really am."
Midnight rolls around, and when Eponine taps Gavroche on the shoulder, all she says is, "Brush your teeth," which is how Grantaire knows both of them are staying over tonight. Gavroche scowls up at her from where he's wreaking havoc on Grantaire's iTunes, but doesn't argue, which is how Grantaire knows it's something worse than usual. When Gavroche is in the bathroom, Grantaire squeezes her shoulder, and she doesn't shrug it off, just rests her hand over his and lets out a long, rattling sigh.
"I'm sorry," he says at last. "At whatever shitty hand life dealt you this time," he means, but he chickens out at her expression. "The table thing. To put you through that. Courfeyrac chews with his mouth open, just to warn you."
"It's fine," she says. "It's distraction, and that's what, you know."
"I don't know," he thinks.
"I never have any goddamn idea." But he does understand wanting to think about other things, that particular mental sleight of hand, better than he understands almost anything.
"Everyone's okay with me sitting there? Are you sure?" "They voted," he reminds her. "All in favor."
She frowns, forehead wrinkling.
"Even everyone? Really?"
"Even everyone," says Grantaire. "And the first to say yes was Combeferre, so maybe you should lay off him."
"Really?" says Eponine.
His hand went up so fast, I thought he was going to throw his shoulder.
"Really?" she says again. And this is unlike her.
"Really?"
"Really?"
says Gavroche from the door. His grin is especially shit-eating. Grantaire feels a thin thread of apprehension.
"What did you do to my music?"
"Got rid of all your shitty stuff," Gavroche announces, flopping onto the floor. "Now your boyfriend has a fighting chance of thinking maybe you're cool. It took forever. It was like half your music."
Grantaire buries his head in his hands.
"I hid it in a subfolder on your desktop. I'm not an animal," says Gavroche cheerfully.
"It's a wasted effort," says Eponine.
"Enjolras already knows he's not cool." She extracts some pajamas from her pile of clean laundry on the floor.
"And he's dating you anyway?" says Gavroche.
"Whoa. Marry this dude." He can hear Eponine snickering on her way out the door. Grantaire drags his hands over his face and into his hair. That's not legal in the state. Gavroche shrugs blithely. Then do an illegal wedding, he says. Please. Like you couldn't find a bribable priest. Not quite how it works, says Grantaire. Once Eponine is out of earshot, he takes a deep breath and opens his mouth, but Gavroche cuts him off. Before you even ask, I have no idea what's going on, he says, eyes still trailing toward the computer and its siren song of fucking with Grantaire's files. Please, says Grantaire in a low voice. I know there's always something, but this seems bad, and I just want to make sure things are okay. Goddamn tall order there, Chief, Gavroche mutters. He shakes his head. Look, I don't know, okay? You're her best friend and she barely tells you shit. How much do you think she shares with me? I wouldn't worry, dude. It's just family shit, you know? That would be comforting if Grantaire didn't privately suspect the Thénardiers were capable of anything. If you guys are in danger, Eponine and I will kick whoever needs kicking in the balls, says Gavroche, like it's the world's most reassuring sentence. Grantaire half smiles. I was gonna say, call the police. Point of fact, we'll probably call you, says Gavroche with a shrug. If it comes to that. I don't think it will, for what it's worth. Panine hasn't tried to teach me self-defense in months. Before Grantaire can puzzle that out, Eponine returns, face freshly scrubbed and much younger looking without makeup. Dibs on the bed, she says, like it's not predetermined at this point. Gavroche sleeps on the floor, as usual, and Grantaire pretends to sleep on the floor, also as usual. He thinks about reading more of Jeanne's book, but there's no way that's going to put him in a good frame of mind for dreams, so instead, he just stares the ceiling down and watches the time on his ancient digital clock slowly slip, number by number, into morning. Eponine and Gavroche leave at 6 a.m., so there's no chance of Grantaire's parents being awake to discover them. They're muzzy-eyed and subdued, and Grantaire tiptoes into the kitchen and grabs them each another packet of Pop-Tarts. He watches them go from the window, waving, but they don't see him. The street outside is dark and quiet, the wet grass impossibly green, super-saturated like it's been photoshopped. Eponine wrestles her bike from behind some bushes, and they both climb on, Gavroche perching on the handlebars. The last time they came over, they each had a bike of their own. It's never clear, when it comes to the Thénardiers, what details are weird and harmless, and what's a sign of something much worse. Gavroche seems to think she'll talk about it if she needs to, and he tries to content himself with that. Then he notices he's swaying on his feet, so tired he feels physically sick, and he drags himself back to his room and flops into bed, ready to pass out for the next 15 hours. Grantaire wakes up to a shrill, terrible noise. He's so out of it that he's turned off his phone, unplugged his alarm clock, flung them both into the trash can, and is halfway through a horror movie-style freakout, wondering if the sound is coming from inside his own head, before he figures it out. Mom! He yells. Get the door! Nothing. But then, she might have said something about running errands at some point. He's not sure. What time is it? He scrubs his hands over his eyes, then remembers he's just disabled every clock in the room. Right. Dad? He calls. Like that's going to do something. He holds his breath, counts to 3, and sighs it out. Then he flings off the covers and staggers to his feet, ready to have words with whatever asshole decided to go around ringing doorbells in the middle of a Saturday afternoon. The sound continues all the way down the hall. He wrenches open the door and immediately regrets it. White sunlight stabs into his face, and he cowers back like a silent film vampire. As his vision returns, two things occur to him. The ringing is finally stopped, and Enjolras is standing on his doorstep. Grantaire blinks. He opens his eyes. The situation is unchanged. Let me in and I'll explain, says Enjolras. There's a flash of blue in the edge of his vision, and he peers past Enjolras's shoulder to see a sedan idling in the driveway. The hell? Grantaire mumbles. His voice is creaky with sleep. Who is that? Enjolras grits his teeth. Let me in. Grantaire shrugs elaborately and steps aside, leaving Enjolras to follow. He shuts the door, and now Enjolras is standing in the front hall, looking golden and perfect and thoroughly out of place. Grantaire runs a hand through his own hair, which has no doubt formed some kind of topiary shape while he was sleeping. He is sharply aware that he hasn't put on deodorant or brushed his teeth today, and he's still in pajamas, a threadbare shirt from an 8th-grade field trip, and boxers. After a second, Enjolras notices too, because his eyes widen a fraction, and fuck. Grantaire refuses to be self-conscious about this. Just refuses. "Whatever, man. You're lucky I'm wearing anything," he mutters. "What the hell? I was asleep." "It's 5 p.m., says Enjolras. Grantaire shrugs. "Never said it wasn't." He wipes the sleep from his eyes, grimacing at the taste in his mouth. "Wait," he says slowly. "Why are you in my house?" "My mom," Enjolras starts. "And that explains the car, at least. She heard about our pretend date, whatever, and today she took it into her head to give me a ride. I kept saying she didn't need to, but she was going that way anyway." He sighs. "It took the whole way here to convince her not to stop in and meet you. Thank God for that." Still, Grantaire can't stop himself from saying, "That long?" "She's a lawyer, Grantaire. She argues for a living." "And you couldn't give me any warning?" "Well, no," says Enjolras with exaggerated patience, "because I don't have your phone number." "You couldn't email me?" says Grantaire. "I did. Twice. 30 minutes ago, says Enjolras. This is probably true. Grantaire chews on his lip. He hasn't checked his email since about 2 a.m. "Why did you tell your mom?" he says finally. "I didn't," Enjolras counters. Grantaire shakes his head, confused. "Marius," says Enjolras mournfully. "And wow, that kid really can't keep a secret." "Jesus," says Grantaire. Enjolras narrows his eyes, one hell of a scowl forming on his face. He means well. Watching Enjolras come to the aid of his friends is both heartwarming and irritating, or something. Grantaire fights the urge to scowl back. Instead, he snorts and rolls his head to the side. "He means well" is one of those things you only say when you can't think of anything nice about a person. He may be a walking liability, but hey, he doesn't actively want evil shit to happen. "Hooray, let's fucking buy him a pony." "I don't know," says Enjolras. There's something to be said for choosing kindness over cheap, snide remarks. Grantaire can feel his shoulders hunch, because wow, does Enjolras have a knack for making him feel like living roadkill. "When does your mom get back from wherever she's going?" he mumbles. Enjolras blinks, apparently caught off guard. "I don't know. A few hours?" "That could be promising. Is your dad home?" Grantaire asks. It occurs to him that he doesn't even know if Enjolras has a dad. Enjolras Sr. could be dead or divorced, or, in fact, a lesbian woman. He's half bracing himself for a lecture on heterocentrism, or the dangers of normalizing the nuclear family, but instead, Enjolras says, "Yeah? Do you think he'd notice if I immediately dropped you back off?" Enjolras winces. "I can't think of any way he wouldn't." Grantaire scrubs a hand down his face again. "Fuck," he says with feeling. There is a cosmic injustice happening here. He wishes he still believed in God, so he'd have someone to lodge a complaint with. "Grantaire?" "What?" He peers over his hand at Enjolras, whose eyebrows are climbing his forehead. "Are you, planning on putting on pants at some point?" Enjolras clears his throat. "Really, at any point?" Grantaire glances down. "Right, boxers. Fuck. Don't try to change me, baby," he deadpans. It's met with total silence. When he risks a look back, Enjolras' lips are pressed into a tight line. What exactly was Grantaire expecting? He huffs a sigh and pads down the hallway, motioning with a jerk of his head for Enjolras to follow. After a second, he hears tentative footsteps. His room is at the end of the hall. He's not about to invite Enjolras in with him while he changes, but it feels equally weird to make Enjolras wait outside the door like a dog. Grantaire points out the kitchen as they pass it. "Do you want anything to eat or drink?" he says. The words come out oddly formal, like he's his own butler. Eponine and Gavroche know by now to just take whatever food they want. He's not used to playing host. "We've got, I don't know, chips, apples, juice." "You're seriously not going to put pants on?" says Enjolras, shrilly. Somewhere within the churning, nausea swamp that is Grantaire's mind right now, there is a solid fragment of annoyance, like a piece of debris or a makeshift raft. Grantaire could explain himself, but he can't help how much better it feels to be angry. "Oh my god, dude, didn't realize you were Amish. I'm showing less skin than an old-timey bathing suit. What is your problem?" "I'm not asking you for crazy things right now," Enjolras snaps. "For the love of God, I'm asking you to wear pants!" "Fine," says Grantaire. He lets his lip curl derisively. "I will cover my shame if it means so much to you." He stalks down the hallway. There's no way to hide what a god-awful mess his room is right now, so he doesn't try, just whisks the door open. "Wait here," he says over his shoulder. Enjolras nods curtly, and the annoyance grows. Strikes a spark of something like belligerent mischief. "In the meantime," Grantaire adds, "here's a little something for your fainting couch." He drags down the neck of his t-shirt to bare his collarbone, makes a mock scandalized expression. Enjolras stares at him. Grantaire ducks into his room and throws the door shut, takes a deep, gulping breath of air. There's a mirror over his dresser, but he can't look his reflection in the eye. "Dude," he thinks, "what are you even doing?" He has no answers for himself. He glances around the floor. The cleanest clothes in his room all belong to Eponine. Her laundry is still heaped under his bookshelf, even though he knows he told her to stop doing that. He barely has the space for all of his shit, let alone hers. The cleanest clothes that he owns are probably the pair of jeans crumpled by his bed. He hops into them, zips up, throws on a hoodie so nobody has to be traumatized by his elbows, either. His toenails are still dark purple from when Eponine did them. He doesn't think Enjolras noticed, probably too horrified by, oh, everything from the ankles up. He snorts, now there's a bright side, and grabs some socks. On closer inspection, his jeans are actually spattered with paint. Dried paint, but still. It has to look sloppy as hell. On the other hand, the longer he hides in here, the more it's going to seem like he's trying. Brushing his teeth isn't negotiable, though. The inside of his mouth is a terrible place right now. His teeth are, like, fuzzy. When he peeks out into the hallway, it's empty. Whatever. He trusts that Enjolras was smart enough to find the kitchen again if he got hungry. His hair, when he finally brings himself to look in the bathroom mirror, is as bad as he imagined, sticking out in every direction. Should he brush it? Although, what does it matter? Enjolras has already seen him at his worst. Nothing can undo that. On the other hand, Grantaire rakes his fingers through his curls and studies the effects. None whatsoever. God, this is stupid. As if all that's standing between Grantaire and Enjolras' good opinion is a respectable hairdo. Stupid, stupid. Maybe some water would help it lie flat? His hat is back in his room. He spits out a mouthful of toothpaste, darts across the hallway, retrieves the hat from under his dresser, and tugs it on. He's left Enjolras waiting for what is probably way too long, but with any luck, Enjolras will just assume Grantaire fell asleep again or something. He glances around the room. In fact, maybe that's not a bad plan. Maybe he can hide in here for a few hours until it's time to give Enjolras a ride home. His eyes land on Jeanne's book. What would a World War I poet do? March resolutely into mustard gas and get super traumatized. What would Jeanne Prouvaire himself do? Suck it up and deal with the situation like an adult. What would Eponine do? Trick question. Eponine would never get herself into the situation in the first place. Grantaire needs shittier friends. Damn it, guys, he mutters, pulling open the door. The kitchen is empty. For one brief, wild moment, Grantaire thinks that maybe Enjolras was the one to chicken out. That he snuck out the back door or climbed out a window or something. As much as he hates to admit it, part of him is also kind of, not thrilled at the thought. He's just backtracking to the hallway when he hears Andros calling.
I'm over here,
from the direction of the living room. Grantaire feels a rush of what he's going to pretend isn't relief. When he shuffles through the doorway, Andros is standing with his back to him. Grantaire follows his line of sight, and his stomach sinks again. There's a reason Grantaire doesn't spend much time in the living room. Why couldn't his parents just take the whole stupid trophy case down? How is it even still standing? Where are neighborhood vandals when you need them?
I didn't know you had a younger brother, says Enjolras.
Grantaire coughs, awkward. I don't. There's a pause.
Then this is all you?
Enjolras sounds tentative. With a sweep of his hand, he indicates the rest of the case and its rows of awards and photos and newspaper clippings.
No, dude, I fucking bought them on eBay to impress you, Grantaire snaps.
Enjolras doesn't quite seem to hear him. You won the spelling bee. Twice. He nods toward the twin plastic trophies, the framed photograph of a smiling, gap-toothed 10-year-old Grantaire shaking hands with the principal on stage.
Yeah.
Grantaire crosses his arms. 5th and 6th grade.
Lucky for me, I didn't have to go against Combeferre. He had that shit in the bag.
And some sort of middle school drumming competition.
3rd place, says Grantaire.
3rd place out of the entire state, says Enjolras, who of course is taking the time to read all the stupid little plaques. Ribbons for the science fair, the art fair, best anti-drug speech? Grantaire fights back a snicker.
There's an irony he hasn't appreciated in a while.
Perfect attendance?
Yeah, I don't know how the attendance thing made it into the lineup. I think my mom was just filling out the row.
Enjolras gives the shelf one last look and turns to face him.
My mom knows your mom, he says.
Okay, says Grantaire. They're in the same aerobics class.
Grantaire squints at him.
Never said they weren't, he says slowly.
Enjolras huffs an annoyed breath.
I mean, I keep thinking you're going to ask how my mom knew the way to your house.
I just assumed I was being punished for something, Grantaire says. Like, karmically.
My mom has been to your house before, says Enjolras. Dogged. She knew your mom had a son, but she was under the impression that the son was about 12. I couldn't figure it out, but... There are pictures of you as a kid all over the hallway, in the kitchen. In here, there's a whole display. And then, nothing from the last 4 or 5 years. At all. It's like you died.
This is not the conversation Grantaire expected to be having.
Yeah, well... He glances down at his bestockinged feet. They lost some enthusiasm for the whole parenting thing when I flunked the easiest possible year of high school.
What?
Enjolras furrows his brow.
How were you held back?
Combeferre said he was in 2nd grade with you.
Oh, God. How has Enjolras not yet heard about this particular failure parade?
We were.
Then I skipped a grade.
Then I flunked a grade.
Now we're in the same grade again.
Grantaire spreads his hands.
It's a living fable.
Icarus, wings, blah blah blah.
Enjolras' expression would fit a lot better on a social worker. His eyes are so wide.
Eponine's voice comes filtering back again. Like I'm a barefoot orphan in one of those Save the Children ads.
Suddenly, he understands why she was such an asshole to Combeferre.
Grantaire can deal with annoyance, anger, disappointment, disgust, whatever, but Enjolras' pity is intolerable.
Grantaire, says Enjolras quietly, you won spelling bees.
You were in marching band.
You had perfect attendance.
What happened?
What happened to me?
Between middle school and now?
Enjolras nods.
See, this is awkward.
Grantaire drops his voice to a whisper.
Has nobody told you about puberty?
He mocks sighs.
Man, I am not the person to give you this talk, but... A few years from now, you're going to start noticing certain changes. Your voice will get deeper, you'll find hair growing in places where there wasn't hair before, and you're going to start getting these urges. But don't worry, it's all perfectly natural.
Forget it, Enjolras snaps. I thought since we were stuck together anyway, we might as well have a normal human conversation.
Believe it or not, yo Grantaire, why are you such an incredible fuck-up,
is not the world's best icebreaker.
Oh, says Enjolras. I didn't mean to, cause offense, he stammers, looking genuinely stricken.
Months of needling Enjolras for any kind of response, and here's a new expression altogether. But although Grantaire tries and tries, he can't feel any sense of victory. It's not like Enjolras asked to be here, making mortifying conversation in front of the mortifying monument to who Grantaire used to be. Grantaire crosses his arms.
It's fine, dude. You didn't, like, offend me.
Just for future reference or whatever, maybe keep in mind you're not my fucking shrink. He trails off. Because what are the odds Enjolras is going to have dealings with another guy of Grantaire's particular sad sack pedigree? Grantaire should be trying harder to shine a positive light on the whole greater community of 17-year-old has-beens. Represent his people. He's not sure why he thought crossing his arms was going to help. It only feels awkward. He shakes them free, but now his hands are left sort of flopping there at the end of his wrists. He crosses his arms again.
Sorry, says Enjolras, which is a first.
Grantaire looks up at him. He has the sense he should probably make a big deal out of this, pantomime tremendous shock, pretend not to understand how that word could possibly come out of Enjolras. It sounds like the kind of thing Grantaire would do. Sometimes he is just so tired of himself. Instead, he shrugs and, out of lack of anything better to do, jabs a thumb at a framed newspaper photo of Mural Club in action. See the kid on the end there? Totally not looking at the camera? That is a rare glimpse of young Jean Prouvaire in the wild. This earns a smile from Enjolras. Or at least, the sight of Jean does, face still round with baby fat, clad in a turtleneck and corduroy overalls, gaze 1,000 miles away. Enjolras shuffles a half-step toward the photo.
Is that a pair of heart-shaped sunglasses? You better believe it.
Grantaire grins.
God, what a cool kid.
No, says Enjolras. I mean, is that you? In the front. Grantaire has no memory of this photo being taken, but he can imagine how it went. The tallest members of Mural Club are in the back, standing. The rest of the kids are kneeling in a second row below them. 12-year-old Grantaire is formed a third row all by himself, sprawled at their feet, with the ease of a kid accustomed to being the shortest in any group photo. He's resting his head in one hand, a deliberately goofy glamour pose. His hair is wild, and he's got a long-handled paintbrush clenched in his teeth like a rose. His grin is toothy and manic, and most of the reason Grantaire has a hard time looking at pictures like this.
No, says Grantaire.
I am the much, much cooler kid lying directly behind him, too close to be seen.
It's definitely you, Enjolras insists. You've got the same nose.
Grantaire shakes his head.
Won it from him in a card game.
Although, maybe he should have just let it go, because now Enjolras is peering intently at the photo.
You have the same eyebrows, too, says Enjolras.
Those were the stakes, Grantaire babbles. Nose and eyebrows, best 2 out of 3. And the same teeth. Grantaire has never in his life gotten the feeling that there is anything particularly distinctive about his teeth. He clamps his lips shut on instinct.
Also, what card games does a middle schooler even know? Says Enjolras. I mean, unless you were a much cooler middle schooler than me.
I was not, says Grantaire, with feeling.
You can't know that, says Enjolras.
You didn't know 13-year-old me.
I don't need to. Seriously. You dodged a bullet not meeting that kid.
Grantaire pokes a finger at the glass. He doesn't want to imagine how that version of Grantaire would have reacted to Enjolras.
Unfortunately, he can, with sickening clarity.
Hey, Enjolras! Want to hear some facts about bats? Enjolras, I can do a cartwheel, want to see? Hey, Enjolras! Enjolras! Who's your favorite scientist? What's your favorite mythological creature? Hey, Enjolras, I drew you a picture. Do you like it? Do you? Do you? Hey, Enjolras!
God. Grantaire does better when he doesn't think about this shit. His mind races for a subject change. Any subject change. I think I might have a picture of Tiny Corvirok somewhere, he offers. From the school play. I'll try to find it sometime. For the sake of his own sanity, He's going to wait until he can dig up a picture that doesn't also include Tiny Grantaire in Peter Pan tights and pony-toed shoes. Tiny Corphyrock is hilarious. His face is made of freckles, and he has, like, no hair. Seriously, there's nothing funnier than a little kid with a buzz cut. He looks like a baby chicken. I may need to see that, Enjolras allows. And wow, is that the slightest trace of a smile? Maybe not. But the possibility gives Grantaire a small flare of goodwill, gives him the courage to take a deep breath and say, Look, this doesn't have to be, like, torture. Neither of us wants to have a shitty Saturday, and we aren't terrible fucking people. When he looks over, Enjolras doesn't contradict him, which is nice. We just need to not kill each other for a while, and then I can drop you back at your house, and drive off before your parents have a chance to meet me. In the meantime, I'll lend you a book, or you can use my computer or something. Okay? Enjolras gives one last glance at the trophy case, in a way that is seriously testing Grantaire's goodwill reserves. Finally, he nods. Okay. So, Grantaire heads back down the hallway, forcing his stride casual as his mind maps the current mess on his floor with frantic intensity, trying to remember if there is anything embarrassing in plain view. He's lucky. Eponine and Gavroche drop by often enough that it's not like he keeps porn lying around. He's also lucky in that nothing he owns is half as humiliating as that stupid trophy case. Well, except for the insides of some of his drawing notebooks. But Enjolras is surely smart enough not to rifle through Grantaire's papers. And if he isn't, well, Grantaire can always just change his name and move to a different country. Dye his hair. Grow a mustache. Join the French Foreign Legion. I take it you're an only child? Says Enjolras, as they pass a framed photo of 7-year-old Grantaire, missing his front teeth and flanked by grandparents. Grantaire shakes his head. I've got a half-brother. He's 12 years older, I think. What's he like? Says Enjolras. With what can't possibly be genuine interest, come on. Grantaire cranes his neck around to throw him a look. Why play nice with the whole small talk routine when nobody else is even around? But Enjolras shrugs and says, What? I always wanted siblings. Enjolras is an only child. This is perhaps the least surprising piece of information Grantaire has ever heard. Enjolras wants to vicariously experience having brothers and sisters through other people? Whatever. I don't really know him. Like, we didn't grow up together or anything. He lives on the other side of the country, and he doesn't visit. What does he do? Heroin, I think, says Grantaire. I'm under the impression he sleeps a lot, so probably not cocaine or meth. That's not funny, says Enjolras, stiffly. Yeah, says Grantaire. I know. He was little when Louis dropped out of college and most of that drama went down, so mostly he remembers walking in on a lot of tense parental conversations he was too young to understand. Enjolras doesn't say anything for a moment. Then, you're serious? I have that capability within me. Grantaire pauses. Also, how the fuck would that be a joke? The old junkie brother routine, of course. They've reached the door of his room. He twists the knob and starts to step inside, but Enjolras remains in the hallway, looking thoughtful. That's why there's no pictures of him, he says. And shit, this is edging dangerously back into therapist territory. Technically, I'm still the good son, Grantaire agrees. Try not to shit yourself from shock. It's probably just as well that Enjolras chooses to ignore that comment. Well, I'm sorry that happened, he says. It must have been hard for you. We weren't close, Grantaire says again. It's not some big... I mean, is it weird that there's somebody walking around with my DNA who... Yeah, whatever, it's weird. But I never knew him, and he's shown zero interest in getting to know me, so, like... Do you want to talk about something else? Enjolras ventures. Grantaire shoots him a grateful smile. God, yes. Fucking anything. They're still just hovering around Grantaire's doorway, doorknob digging into Grantaire's spine like it's after blood. Grantaire steps inside, gives the door a little there-you-go flip, and then Enjolras is following him,
And then Andoros is standing in Grantaire's bedroom. And Andoros is taking in all the posters and sketches stuck to the wall. And Grantaire is forcing himself not to imagine how it all must look from his perspective. Inside, it's dim and cave-like. One of the bulbs in the overhead light has burned out. Andoros's hair is the brightest thing in the room. Andoros is in his room, which is not something Grantaire has even fantasized about. His fantasies are not that ambitious. Of course, his fantasies aren't this nerve-wracking either. Andoros is silent for an uncomfortably long time. If you want a book, the books are... Grantaire manages to not actually say out loud, "The books are in the bookcase," but it's a close enough call that he can't feel good about it. Luckily, Andoros doesn't seem to notice, just takes a step toward the sagging shelves and the mound of Eponine's clothes beneath them. Grantaire is struck with the sudden, vivid, horrifying image of Andoros snagging his foot on a bra, like an angry wolf cub with one paw caught in a lacy purple bear trap. "Look out," Grantaire blurts, pulling him back by the sleeve of his red hoodie. Says Andoros. Grantaire lets go, flexes his fingers. Andoros looks down at the heap of shirts and C-cups and panties, and back at Grantaire. There's the beginnings of a frown on his face, and Grantaire wastes a long moment trying to guess what Andoros is thinking. Assuming the worst. That seems like a safe bet. But what would that even be here? It's probably not, "Oh, I guess this guy is a secret crossdresser," because that wouldn't be such a big deal to Andoros. Maybe he's decided Grantaire is a kleptomaniac. Who knows? "I keep telling Eponine not to leave all her shit in my room, but..." Grantaire mutters, which only earns an abrupt nod. Whatever judgment Andoros has made, this in no way softens it. "Awesome." Grantaire coughs. "I'm gonna go get you a chair." When he returns, dragging a dining room chair behind him, Andoros is standing by the bookcase with a book in each hand. Grantaire raises his eyebrows. "Is this some new smart kid trick? Two books at once? Double reading?" "Couldn't decide," says Andoros stonily. He angles the covers up. "Which one should I..." "Oh my god," says Grantaire, when he finally makes out the titles. "Neither." "What?" Andoros is full-on scowling now, but it's different than his standard scowl. Some added element. Defensiveness, almost. "They're your books." "Yeah, but..." Grantaire sighs. "Look, 1984? You're gonna think you love it. And then you're gonna get to the end and realize you hated it all along. And Fight Club? Believe me when I say that this nation is not prepared for an Andoros who has read Fight Club. Want to maybe speed this up by recommending something? Instead of just telling me why whatever I pick is stupid?" Andoros snaps. If Grantaire didn't know any better, he'd say it almost sounds hurt. "Whoa, man, calm the hell down," says Grantaire. He deposits the chair in the middle of the room, and climbs over several piles of crap until he reaches the bookcase. He stares down at the faded spines, at a loss. It's all shit from middle school and freshman year. He hasn't bought a lot of new books since. Well, wedged between his bed and the wall, there's the copy of Grapes of Wrath he picked up after their final detention together, but that's a secret he's taking to his grave. Grantaire's book collection is evenly divided into classic literature bullshit accumulated for school and the dorky fantasy books he'd devoured for escapism. A lot of magic swords and square-jawed moody heroes and busty princesses disguised as barmaids or whatever. Even at the time, Grantaire had known it was over the top. Andoros would probably rather toss one of those paperbacks in a blender and drink the pulp than read the thing. Grantaire wouldn't blame him. The imaginary Andoros who lives in Grantaire's head and judges every single thing Grantaire has ever done makes some good points sometimes. "Have you read Harry Potter?" says Grantaire, tentatively. "For crying out loud," says Andoros. "Yes, I've read Harry Potter. I'm not a Martian." Grantaire is seized by a sudden, burning desire to learn absolutely every opinion Andoros has about the wizarding world. If Grantaire had even the slightest chance of getting the answers, he'd ask. But he knows he's already screwed that one up. Andoros would rather be anywhere else on the planet right now, including, like, inside volcanoes or at the bottom of oceans.
"What's going on, dude?"
says Grantaire quietly, sensing some hostility here.
There's a very long pause, long enough that Grantaire is just about to say,
"Fuck it,"
and leave him to the tender mercies of the cheesiest fantasy novel available. And then Enjolras busts out with,
"What does Eponine think about all of this? Pretending to date?"
Grantaire blinks.
"What? She thinks it's stupid as hell. Why?"
He wishes he could read Enjolras' face better, but Enjolras isn't even looking at him.
"Was she okay with it? Did you even run it by her first?"
"Why the fuck would I need to?" says Grantaire.
"It's not her call.
Like, at all.
I didn't ask her what pants to put on this morning either."
For some reason, this makes Enjolras sigh, resolute. Whatever mysteries are swirling around in his head, he's come to a decision.
"Okay, for the record," he says,
"I get that it's none of my business, and I don't want to start a fight right now."
"Ooh, can't wait to see how this sentence ends," Grantaire interjects.
"But, for the record," says Enjolras, and he glances up then, looks Grantaire straight in the eye. That is a shitty thing to do to a person. Nothing is making sense. It's all the downsides of being high, with absolutely none of the fun parts.
"The fuck are you talking about, man?"
"I'm not stupid."
"What?"
says Grantaire. Enjolras' eyes flicker down at the pile of Eponine's clothes, and then back up. Something in his brain clicks just then. Clicks hilariously.
"Oh my god, dude, do you think me and Eponine are hooking up or something?"
"You aren't?" says Enjolras, brows knit together. Grantaire laughs so hard he almost falls over. Then he actually does fall over, because his floor is a death trap.
"Oh my god, man!"
he wheezes from atop a pile of papers.
"Oh, you were fucking with me! Eponine? What the hell?"
Enjolras bristles, but less intensely than before. A hedgehog instead of a porcupine. "You're always together. She leaves her underwear in your room. It's not an unreasonable thing to..."
"There's like 6 bras in there," says Grantaire. "A lady's not going to forget her bra 6 times in a row. I don't care what kind of crazy passionate lovemaking you think is going on here. So either Eponine's got 12 boobs, or she does her laundry in my house."
He sucks in a big gulp of air. His stomach muscles ache.
"Fuck, I need to remember to tell her about this. She's gonna literally laugh her ass off."
Enjolras opens his mouth, and Grantaire cuts in quick with,
"No, don't tell me what literally means. I meant literally."
He gazes up at his ceiling.
Fishermen in the Pacific elbowing each other, all, "What's that weird object flying through the sky? Oh wait, that's Eponine's ass, soaring on the winds of hilarity."
There's a quiet huffing from Enjolras' direction, something suspiciously laugh-like. By the time Grantaire looks over at him, there's no way to know for sure, but whatever weird storm seems to have passed.
"Me and Eponine," says Grantaire. "What the fuck, man?" "Don't worry. I didn't hook you into some screwed-up pretend cheating drama. Imaginary me is a one-imaginary-man kind of guy. Is actual you gonna tell me what to read? Or should I just go look at the trophy case some more?" says Enjolras. "Stare at the pictures. Commit all the plaques to memory. Really do a deep read of those newspaper clippings."
"Oh, fuck you." Grantaire struggles to his feet.
"Here, this one. Read this."
He tugs the book out by its spine, deposits it in Enjolras' hands.
"The Golden Compass," Enjolras reads.
He flips it over, frowns. "It says, for ages 12 and up."
"I read it when I was 11. Fuck the police," says Grantaire.
"No, it's good. You'll like it." Enjolras gives the polar bear on the cover a long, considering look.
"Hey, either you have fun reading a book, or you prove me wrong," Grantaire wheedles. "Win-win?"
Maybe the argument works, or maybe Enjolras resigns himself to the fact that Grantaire doesn't have anything better. At any rate, Enjolras settles into the dining room chair in the middle of the room, and Grantaire settles in at his desk. His hands hover at the keyboard. There's clearly no way he's going to be able to relax enough to do his usual aimless dicking around on the internet, not with the computer screen directly in Andros's line of sight, vulnerable at any second to that laser-focused disapproval. Instead, he starts searching through his music files, trying to figure out the scope of Gavroche's damage. The kid didn't lie. He did keep a folder of everything he deleted from Gontaire's iTunes. The thing is, he also renamed most of the tracks. Stuff like, "This song is disguised for your own good," .mp3, and, "Just forget about this one, just let it go," and, "Come on, dude, seriously?" At least this way, Grantaire is actually going to get something done today, he thinks, slipping in an earbud and queuing up the first song. It takes about 5 seconds, until the guitars come in, for him to recognize what it is, and another few seconds to replace Gavroche's title, "Go sit in a corner and think about what you did," with the actual track name. At this rate, he could be done in an hour if he focuses. It would probably be easier to focus if he wasn't quite so vividly aware of Andros sitting in the chair behind him. As it is, he can't help glancing over his shoulder every few seconds. But every time he checks, Andros is reading intently, and after the 12th or 13th time, Grantaire starts to calm down, until he's no longer flinching at every noise behind him, until he starts to fall into a rhythm. It turns out Gavroche mostly left the track order in place, so all Grantaire has to do is identify the album and things get way easier from there. Until the sound of Andros's breathing, the quiet repetitive shush of turning pages no longer makes Grantaire straighten up in his chair, until it starts to feel almost comforting, a pleasant background hum like rain or the ocean or frying bacon. It's almost like hanging out with Eponine when she's in one of her less chatty moods, him drawing, her listening to music on headphones. Unfortunately, as Grantaire's stomach finally settles, it comes with the painful reminder that the last thing he ate was some chips off Gavroche's plate almost 24 hours ago. He could go for some Chinese, actually, but he's not about to say that out loud, turn this night into some fucked-up mirror version of their pretend date. He tugs out the other earbud and swivels around. Andros is staring down at the book, lips moving slightly as his eyes scan across the page. He's smiling just a little. Grantaire watches for a good long moment, telling himself it's to savor his victory about the book, and not about how hard it is to look away from a genuinely happy Enjolras. Just before the look can go from besotted to creepy, Grantaire clears his throat. "Wanna order a pizza or something?" he mumbles, syllables tripping all over each other. Enjolras resurfaces slowly, blinking. "What?" "Guessing your mom didn't feed you before she whisked you away for our romantic evening together," says Grantaire. "Pizza?" This gets the expected eye roll, but Enjolras concedes, "I am pretty hungry. We could split a large?" Grantaire assumes they're going to haggle for a long time on toppings, but Enjolras's only stipulations are no sausage. There are probably dick jokes to be made here, but in this tentative almost peace, Grantaire is not the man for the job. Andros calls in the order, and then, and okay, Grantaire should have expected this, they have a lengthy fight about who's going to pay. "How is this complicated?" Grantaire finds himself saying. "My house, my rules, my pizza." Andros doesn't back down. "This, today, is my fault. I should have thought to keep Marius away from my mom, and now I'm intruding on your weekend, so why can't I—" "Because I was in love with you before you offered to buy me a pizza," Grantaire tries hard not to think. "Such a gentleman," he says out loud. "But if you're only prepared to pay me $20 to date you, there's no way you have money to burn on delivery food." "My parents gave me some cash as we were leaving," says Enjolras, "specifically so I could cover myself." "Are they seriously that cool with thinking you're dating a dude?" Grantaire pauses with the realization that he doesn't even know for sure if Enjolras is gay. He seems like the kind of person who could conceivably throw himself into the situation on pure ideology. One corner of Enjolras's mouth tilts up. "They already know I'm not going to give them grandchildren," he says, which doesn't answer anything. It's none of Grantaire's business, of course. Enjolras is equally unattainable either way. It's like getting worked up when a celebrity gets married. Your chances can't shrink from zero. "No, they're okay with it," Enjolras assures him, misinterpreting Grantaire's frown.
They're fine. They love me. It's not a problem.
Oh, says Grantaire.
I figured, Enjolras starts. Well, I figured if nothing else, you wouldn't want to have to lie to your parents. So I told my mom you weren't out to your family yet, and not to mention it to anyone. She was starting to ask a lot of questions, and that distracted her. So I played it up. Said you were kind of miserably closeted. Sorry if it,
Grantaire lets out a shaky sigh.
That was good thinking. In fact, he adds, when Enjolras' expression starts to waver back towards concern, I think you just won yourself a free pizza. Congratulations. And to Grantaire's immense relief, they're back to arguing who's going to pay. Enjolras makes his case well, surprise, surprise, but Grantaire gets in some good points, too. Keep your money, you'll put it to way better use. What am I going to do with an extra $20? Blow it on drugs or snacks. The debate ranges far and wide, and then Enjolras lays the killing blow, which is to fix Grantaire with those terrifyingly earnest eyes and say, please, let me do this. There's just no pulling ahead of that. And so Enjolras wins, but then the delivery guy rings the doorbell while he's in the bathroom, and Grantaire seizes his chance. Fortune favors the brave, he thinks, sliding down the last bit of hallway in his socks. He's so buoyed by his victory, and the chance to rub it in Enjolras' face, maybe, that when he opens the door and sees Mike from school, wearing the trademark ugly polo shirt and holding a large flat box, Grantaire's first instinct is to smile and say, hey man, didn't know you were a pizza guy, how's it going? He gets as far as, hey, before Mike's narrowing his eyes, hissing, what the hell? Like this is some kind of trick. And then Grantaire remembers. Right, he's a pariah again. It's been almost 3 years, but it all comes back to him in a flash. That spike of panic, the way his throat dries up, the way his hands shake. Just like riding a bike. Yesterday, Mike was knocking Jean to the floor without the slightest shred of remorse, and that was in school, surrounded by teachers and possible witnesses. Here, there's nothing to keep him from beating Grantaire to a pulp, and it's clear by the way Mike's standing that he knows this. Says Grantaire in a small voice. Just let me pay. He reaches into his back pocket. His wallet isn't there. It's equally not there the second time he checks, blinking stupidly. The pocket on the other side is empty, too. So are his front pockets. Mike glowers. Grantaire tries to pull back his thoughts from where they're rapidly skittering away. He can only think of one other place it could be, although he doesn't remember seeing it on his desk. He says, darting a glance back towards his room. I need to... His heart is beating like it wants out of his ribcage. Just give me the fucking money, Mike spits out. And Grantaire chokes on a hysterical laugh, because suddenly this is a mugging. This is a mugging plus a pizza. This is absolutely the stupidest way anyone will have ever died. Nobody will be able to look his tombstone in the eye. I don't... Grantaire stammers. I don't have the... I need to... He jerks an arm behind himself. Mike takes a step forward. And it should be hilarious. Anyone trying to look threatening in that stupid polyester shirt. Grantaire suddenly does not see the humor. Please, says Grantaire. I just... Listen, homo, says Mike. Oh, look, pizza's here, says Enjolras coolly. Grantaire whips around. He watches as Enjolras strides up between them, pulls a crisp 20 from his pocket, and hands it over. They should cover it.
Mike glares at Enjolras, who looks back, level and unafraid, and then turns to smile at Grantaire.
My treat, says Enjolras.
His smile goes sharper, mischievous, and Grantaire can tell it's to mess with Mike. He can tell. But if anything, that just makes it hotter. That underlying edge of fuck the man, and shit, Grantaire is so gone. Enjolras leans closer to Grantaire. Since it's been such a nice night. He tugs the box and the receipt from Mike, sets it on the chair by the door. Mike's eyes flicker back and forth between them. You? I need my change, Enjolras tells him.
1857 including tax, right? So, 143. Mike tries to stare him down. Enjolras snorts and holds out one palm. Imperious. What about tip? Mike grits out, as he counts the change and hands it woodenly to Enjolras. I was 5 minutes early. Right, says Enjolras. He tilts his head to one side. Sorry, I always forget. I know it's 20% for waitstaff and barbers. How much do you tip a homophobe? 0%, right? 0? His tone is flippant, but his eyes are bright with purpose. He glances over at Grantaire, as if for confirmation. Pretty sure it's 0. Grantaire's whole body is so confused. His fight-or-flight system is in turmoil, his libido is having a grand old time, and he's not breathing enough. Mostly, he's got to force himself not to hug Enjolras, although, come to think of it, Grantaire goes to throw an arm across those perfect shoulders. Surely he's allowed that much at this point. He only realizes mid-motion how much taller Enjolras is, how awkward this is going to look, even if Grantaire stands on tiptoes. It's too late to take it back, so Grantaire slides his arm around Enjolras' waist instead, trying not to think about it too hard. Technically, it's still nothing Enjolras hadn't suggested ahead of time. It's half a hug, more or less, and Enjolras has every opportunity to test out their stupid safe word if need be. He doesn't. He does slightly raise his eyebrows, which is fair. The best way to camouflage this is to make it ridiculous, Grantaire thinks, looking up at Enjolras through his lashes and saying, "Oh, Enjolras," in the gooeyest tone he can muster. "You're so smart. So good at math." Enjolras does the little mouth twitch that Grantaire associates with repressed laughter, probably just that jazzed to have the opportunity to troll a bigot like this. "Thanks, babe," he says. "I try." And then Enjolras is wrapping his own arm around Grantaire, palm coming to rest on his hip so casual, like it's not burning a hole through Grantaire's hoodie, like it's not suddenly the only thing Grantaire can focus on, tucked cozily against Enjolras' side. "Tell you what," says Enjolras to Mike, in an entirely different tone. "If you leave right now, we won't call your manager and explain how you tried to physically intimidate a customer." "Whatever," Mike snarls. "We don't need business from you people. Enjoy your food, fags." "Fucking disgusting," he mutters. He slams the door. Neither of them say anything for a second. "I think that went well," says Enjolras finally. "Okay," says Grantaire. He takes a step towards the pizza, but he doesn't get far, because Enjolras still hasn't let go. Of course, Grantaire hasn't either, but still. Enjolras gives him a curious look, follows Grantaire's gaze to where his hand is still flat against Grantaire's hip. "Oh," says Enjolras. "Right." He pulls back, out of Grantaire's reach. "Are you okay?" Enjolras asks him, and Grantaire nods, jerkily. God, what an asshole. He's in history with me. He's basically the dumbest person alive. He didn't know who the current vice president is. How can anyone... "You really are okay?" Grantaire grabs the pizza and turns on his heel back towards his room, leaving Enjolras to scramble behind him. "Fine," says Grantaire, and the advantage here is not having to look into Enjolras' face to say it. "Why?" "You seemed, I don't know, uncomfortable," says Enjolras. And shit, if Enjolras has developed the ability to read his body language, they are going to be in some hot water. "Just hungry." Grantaire is clearing off enough space on his floor for two people and a pizza box, when Enjolras adds, "By the way, your wallet's in the medicine cabinet." "The hell?" Grantaire looks up from the dirty clothes he's kicking under the bed. He's irresponsible with his things as a rule, but he feels like he should have noticed making a move like that. "How the fuck did it wind up there?" he mutters to himself. "Because I put it there," says Enjolras with great patience. "You weren't going to let me pay, and it was right on your desk, so... I figured, no matter what, you weren't going to check the bathroom." Enjolras pushes some papers out of the way with his foot, meditative. "Sorry," he says. It didn't occur to me that the pizza might come early. I really, really wanted to pay.
Grantaire wills himself not to be charmed by the fact that Enjolras essentially stole his wallet out of chivalry. This goes about as well as anything that relies on Grantaire's willpower.
You must be fun to play board games with, he mutters,
and Enjolras just shrugs.
Corvirox says I'm banned from Risk forever.
Fair, says Grantaire.
Fair.
He sets the box on the rug, flings himself down, and snags a slice. Pizza is pizza, delivered by bigot or no. They chew silently for a while. Maybe it's awkward for Enjolras, but Grantaire isn't sure he cares at this point. It's hard to believe he's only been awake for a couple of hours. He just wants to curl up in bed and sleep. Grantaire takes another piece. Enjolras eats his pizza the weirdest way. First he rips up the crust and eats that, then he nibbles all the way around the edges and around again, in a spiral. Grantaire can't see any benefit to doing it this way. Maybe there's some reason Grantaire just doesn't get. If he asks, they're only going to find a way to argue about it. His neck is so sore. He thinks longingly of being a middle school drama kid. All the stretching and trust exercises and massage circles. He could ask Enjolras to form a 2-person massage train. Or, for the same emotional effect, he could just repeatedly slam his head into the wall. Enjolras probably gives terrible neck rubs anyway, he thinks. Cold and impersonal. All clammy robot fingers and insufficient pressure. Not that his hand had felt cold or impersonal on Grantaire's hip, tugging him closer until he was snug in the half-circle of Enjolras's arm, but... Grantaire lets his head loll back and forth as he chews, trying to free up some of the tension. Enjolras glances up mid-bite, and gives him a weird look. Like he can judge, eating his pizza like a serial killer. Then again, recent experience has shown that maybe Grantaire is into Enjolras's murder face. Fuck. Enjolras looks away again, back at the half-empty pizza box between them. Something about the downward slump of his gaze reminds Grantaire of those early days in the cafeteria, Enjolras sitting alone in a crowded room. If I had even the slightest idea of what would make you happy, I'd do it, he thinks. Even if it was idiotic, or humiliating. Stand on his head. Sing the alphabet backwards. Their eyes meet. Did you ever do drama or anything? Says Grantaire. Enjolras shakes his head. Swallows.
Why?
Nothing, just... You did a good job. With Mike, the White Knight routine. God, this is agony. What is Grantaire doing? He puts on a half-hearted, old-timey Hollywood producer voice. You're a natural, kid, he says, wincing inwardly and maybe outwardly, too. You too. Enjolras says it without irony. For real? I was worried it was over the top. I think subtlety is lost on a guy who's convinced World War I was the first ever war, says Enjolras, with a wry twist of his lips. Grantaire laughs before he can stop himself. Yeesh. He gets to his feet, stretches his arms above his head, feels his back pop satisfyingly in about 4 different places. He twists towards his computer, jogging the mouse until the screen floats back up at him. Good news is you can probably go back in like an hour. A 3-hour date is respectable, right? You're asking like I'd know, says Enjolras behind him. You can borrow the book, by the way, Grantaire tosses over his shoulder as he climbs back into his chair. I mean, since clearly I was right and you think it's awesome, figured I'd spare the embarrassment of having to ask. No worries. You can take it back with you, because it's fucking great, because I totally won the argument. He tucks the earbud back into place. He doesn't have the mental energy left to fix his remaining files, so he'll probably just watch something. Not a big deal. You don't even have to thank me. Seriously, don't make it weird. It's cool. He clicks over to the Comedy Central website. I'm not even going to gloat about it, you know? And to be clear, by it, I mean that thing where I was totally right and you were... Are you watching The Daily Show? Enjolras's voice is closer than it should be. Grantaire startles. He spins around on the chair, and Enjolras is only standing about 2 feet away. Yeah, he says, shrugging. Can I watch it with you? No, says Grantaire. Before he realizes how that's going to sound. Enjolras frowns.
I mean, he adds, you're not, like, forbidden. He sighs. It's a dumb story. Eponine gave him shit about it for weeks. The day I got this computer, I spilled half a can of root beer into the speakers, and they've never worked since. He twirls the free earbud in his fingers. Hence the headphones. I thought you were just being considerate, says Enjolras. Grantaire chuckles. No. You only use one earphone at a time. Yeah, says Grantaire. I like to stay alert. Enjolras shakes his head. You regularly slept in detention. You remember that? Grantaire blurts out. Several shades too sentimental. He searches his mind for a fix. It was a cunning ruse. Surprised he fell for it. Much too late to be useful, his brain alights on a better question. Why were you looking in the first place? Seated in front of him, Enjolras would have had to make a deliberate effort to turn around and see. You snore, says Enjolras. There is, of course, no way for Grantaire to disprove it. Instead, he says, Hey, if you want to take a turn on the computer, I can do something else. No, says Enjolras. That's okay. It's just... You're only using half of your headphones. Yeah, says Grantaire. We could share. Enjolras says this slowly, as though it's obvious. Grantaire keeps forgetting how this must be from the other side. Irritating and vaguely confusing. Not a nightmare jungle of hormones and emotion. Oh gosh, why didn't the thought of sharing headphones occur to Grantaire? Maybe because he's not a masochist. Says Grantaire. It's fine, says Enjolras. Not a big deal. Whatever. His eyes slide down to the floor again. It's not a look that seems right for him. Do you want to? Grantaire ventures. I missed Monday's show. Maybe this will somehow not be excruciating, Grantaire thinks, holding out the earbud with a flourish. Enjolras rustles the chair across the floor and next to him. The headphones tether them together, so that there's no way around how their shoulders knock, arms brushing. Grantaire pulls up the episode, rests his temple on his hand until there's nothing Enjolras-like in his peripheral vision, and hits play. There's something surprisingly intimate about laughter in close proximity. Grantaire sort of wishes he'd known that ahead of time, could have taken it into consideration. The sense memory of being crowded up against Enjolras as his body shakes was absolutely information Grantaire didn't need. The better it feels, the worse this is for Grantaire in the long run, and it feels very good. Enjolras smells like something citrusy, soap or shampoo, or who knows. Maybe his pores just naturally give off orange essence. Maybe that's the next step in human evolution. He's a restless TV watcher, shifting in his chair, swinging his foot, and his laugh is as perfect as the rest of him. They're close enough that Grantaire could lean over and rest his head on Enjolras' shoulder, if they lived in a different reality. It's unfair. It's profoundly unfair. It's torture. Grantaire wants to stay here forever. When the closing credits start up, Enjolras clears his throat, awkward. I didn't get to see most of Tuesdays either, he says. And Grantaire's pretty sure this isn't true, but he nods, cues up the next one. He gets to sit next to Enjolras, who in turn doesn't have to make conversation with him. Everyone wins. Then they watch 6 more episodes. Shit, says Grantaire, when he thinks to check the time. Dude, it's almost 10. We've got to get you home. Enjolras looks up at the computer clock with a start and yanks out the earbud. Shit, did I get you in trouble? Says Grantaire. You probably have, like, a curfew, right? Are your mom and dad going to be mad? He tries to imagine the scene. Enjolras' parents waiting up for him. Mrs. Enjolras with her mouth pressed tight. Mr. Enjolras, face full of fatherly concern. Honey, we love you, but you need to tell us if you're going to be out late, okay? He'll admit he fills in the blanks more from TV than personal experience. This gets him a sour look from Enjolras. If they were worried, they'd call. They know my number. Grantaire can't begin to guess what he's done wrong now. Enjolras is a creature of unfathomable whims. Okay, he says. Whatever. Enjolras stands, grabs the book, says, Are we going? We're going, says Grantaire. They're still going to want to meet you, Andros announces from the passenger seat, as Grantaire eases on to the darkened subdivision road.
Tell them I'm shy, says Grantaire, and Andros snorts.
Tell them I'm a shy, delicate flower, Grantaire pushes. With all these, like, issues from being, what did you say, miserably closeted? And that I'm afraid of adults. Because of, you know, the wounds.
He eases to a stop at the sign, considers this.
Is this going to make things weird between your mom and my mom?
No, says Enjolras distantly.
When Grantaire glances over, he's turned towards the window.
My mom didn't really like your mom, he explains to the glass.
Said she seemed insincere.
Ouch, man, says Grantaire with a laugh.
The knowledge is giddying somehow. He's reminded of the first time he got high for real. A pleasant ache spreading out in his chest like he could do anything.
Ouch, he says again.
Enjolras says, in a looking out the window tone. Grantaire turns on the radio to fill in the silence. Some generic pop dance hit where he's picked up the melody through sheer osmosis. He hums along as they drive down the empty streets.
Did Mike seriously think World War I was the very first war?
He asks suddenly.
And that the Ten Commandments were the very first laws, Enjolras confirms.
The teacher tried to back him up on that one. It was ridiculous.
Told you, man. Walker's a dick.
Grantaire shakes his head.
You should've listened to me. I could have clued you in.
In between misogynistic bullshit about getting girls.
Women aren't Pokemon, Grantaire quotes, grinning with nostalgia.
Man, you are a trip. Enjolras heaves a viciously unamused sigh.
Miller, he says, then left on Hemlock. In case you forget. Again.
It's hard to believe this is the same guy that put his arm around Grantaire's waist a few hours ago.
Then again, he kind of isn't.
I fucking got it, Grantaire mutters.
They roll up to Enjolras' house in silence. The second the wheels touch the driveway, floodlights flicker on, lighting up the whole yard and scalding his retinas.
Fuck, says Grantaire, scrunching his face against the spots forming in his eyes.
Came with the house, says Enjolras. We don't know how to turn them off.
Nothing like suburban paranoia.
He puts the van in park, looks over at Enjolras unbuckling his seatbelt.
See you Monday, says Grantaire.
Enjolras hesitates, one hand on the car door, glancing up the driveway at his house.
Dude, Grantaire adds, I'm not meeting your parents.
I know, you already said that.
Enjolras' eyes are on an upstairs window, the only window lit up from inside.
It could be Grantaire's imagination, but he thinks the curtain is moving slightly.
Grantaire does some quick detective work.
That their room?
Yeah, says Enjolras.
What are the chances they're spying on us?
Enjolras turns back to face him. Very, very high.
Luckily, thinks Grantaire, looking back up at the window from the corner of his eye,
Mr. and Mrs. Enjolras have a terrible vantage point.
What? Says Enjolras.
Half his face is illuminated by the floodlights. The effect is otherworldly. He looks like a painting. But when doesn't he?
More important for Grantaire's purposes, the side and shadow isn't visible from the house.
This is easy, says Grantaire.
Okay, don't freak out.
Why? Enjolras starts. But Grantaire is already unbuckling his own seatbelt, leaning in, looking past whatever stoic expression Enjolras must be making right now, until his lips are almost brushing Enjolras's ear.
From this angle, to them, it looks like I'm kissing you, Grantaire whispers.
And then, in case it comes out as longing or pathetic or worryingly breathy as it feels, he adds the most obnoxious kissing sound he can manage. He pulls away, straightens back up.
Seriously, his neck is killing him.
He hopes this isn't going to be a feature of pretend dating.
Enjolras is still in his car.
Everything cool? Says Grantaire.
He has a momentary flash of panic that maybe he's given too much away, but Enjolras just nods distractedly.
See you Monday, he says, climbing out of the van.
See you. Enjolras didn't just hide Grantaire's wallet in the medicine cabinet. He hid it in a box of band-aids. And he hid the displaced band-aids under the soap dish. Grantaire grips the counter and tries not to smile. He is so, so fucked.